all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone. I'm the officer of the deck today. We've got some great programs for you. I think you'll find very interesting. We always want to remind you, you can find more about Veterans Radio at its Facebook site or by going to veteransradio.net, where we're on the web 24/7. You can find a lot of our podcasts there as well. We post new ones every Tuesday, so you can get a new story, a new interview, something you didn't know before by going to veteransradio.net. And before we get started, we want to thank our sponsors. First up, we want to thank National Veteran Business Development Council, NVBDC.org. It was established to certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses. You'll find out how they can help your business by going to NVBDC.org. We want to thank Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans fights for veterans' disability rights all across the nation. You can reach them at 800-693-4800 or on the web at legalhelpforveterans.com. We also want to thank our latest national sponsor, Veteran Lending Council. It is a community dedicated to educating lenders, realtors, and veterans on the VA Home Loan Benefit Program. You can check them out on Facebook and other social media outlets. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Sarah Babiak. She is a licensed professional clinical counselor, and we're going to talk about anxiety. Sarah, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, I don't think we've had on somebody before to talk about this particular aspect of disabilities, mental health issues that folks suffer from, and it's unfortunately fairly popular, fairly widespread. It's reported that 10% of veterans report elevated levels of anxiety, and 7% of veterans report a diagnosis of a adjustment disorder with anxiety. So it's kind of a widespread problem that people just don't talk about, and you probably have seen anxiety creeping into your clinical practice.
Yes, absolutely. Actually, according to the National Institute of Mental Health, anxiety disorders affect around 40 million adults.
Holy cow.
Yeah, absolutely. It's more broad than people realize. I think typically because there's still a stigma surrounding mental health related disorders in general. And, you know, people try to maintain a facade sometimes, especially grownups, and they know, you know, we have a lot of responsibilities to juggle, you know, for parents, you know, if we experience, you know, traumatic events, especially our veterans, things that they witnessed, things that they've been through. You know, anxiety is a normal feeling for every human to experience, you know, in a moderate sense. You know, most of the time your anxiety should come and go with certain stressors that are typical stressors, but, an anxiety disorder is really, it's different. It's becoming more pervasive for people. And it's going to start to interfere with your relationships and your responsibilities as a grown-up. So that's typically what we see when it starts to manifest into a disorder. Well, but it's okay to have anxiety.
It is. We all have it. As you say, it's a common.
We all have it. Yeah. But there's a different degree where it can become really inhibiting in someone's life. And people are hesitant to say that they're struggling because they don't want to be seen as weak or, you know, ungrateful for the things in their life. And I think people are, they're able to kind of hide mental health related symptoms a little differently than maybe a physical health symptom. You can kind of get used to feeling a way that is unpleasant, and you just kind of wait and see if it's going to go away. And over a long time, you know, it doesn't go away. So that's really when we have to be caring toward ourselves and acknowledge that it's okay if I'm not okay, and I need to talk to someone about this.
Absolutely. So, and we're talking to Sarah Babiak, who's a licensed professional clinical counselor. She has her Bachelor's of Arts in Psychology and her Master's in Community Counseling. And Sarah, VA describes an adjustment disorder as characterized as a short-term condition that occurs when a person has great difficulty coping with or adjusting to a particular source of stress, such as a major life change, loss, or event. But it's really, we're talking about it becomes an adjustment disorder with anxiety when it goes from sort of a short-term problem to a longer-term problem impacting life. Can you talk a little bit, let's start with this. Talk a little bit about how anxiety can manifest itself.
Well, if you even, you know, when we were younger, think about a time where you were just nervous in general, a big test coming up, just big life events in general will make you feel these nervous feelings. And typically anxiety, the way that it manifests is very physical in our body. You know, the mind is a very powerful thing, and our brain gets activated in certain areas of our brain, especially that area of that flight or fight response. It can cause that feeling of fear, the extreme fear and worry that's really not going away, can have shortness of breath, racing heartbeat. That happens a lot. You know, imagine this happening to you before bed. It's going to make sleeping very difficult. People feel very restless, on edge. You know, there can be some body trembling, shaking, can feel dizzy, nauseous. Your thinking can be clouded, and then your thinking can also become very negative. You're thinking of the worst case scenario. You're thinking, you know, there's no way out of this, and you start to panic. And a panic attack is really the highest level of anxiety that you can have. And they're very scary for people that experience that episode. And not everyone that has an anxiety disorder will experience panic or panic attacks. But when your anxiety is becoming so extreme, you can eventually develop something called panic disorder. And that can become extremely life-changing and very inhibiting with your overall functioning. But it just feels bad. Your body feels bad. So, you know, you may want to avoid leaving your home. You may want to avoid certain situations socially because you just don't want to have those feelings and you don't want people to witness you having those feelings. So it is something that can really be, you know, people just kind of lose hope, I think, and they feel like this is my new normal and they don't really understand how to get help. But so it is very physical.
So it will.
That's what makes it hard.
Anxiety, which again kind of is a mental thing, will end up impacting work, sleep, relationships, kind of impacts everything, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It does. And honestly, especially with men, grown up men, think about being edgy and being, you know, just feeling unsettled, feeling worried, feeling, you know, if you went through a big life change or you're going into the service, you're being discharged from the service, you're used to, you know, such a regimented routine way of life. And now you kind of have this autonomy, and that can be very unsettling. So I feel like a lot of men get very angry and very easily irritated. They may seem more explosive at certain times. And especially, you know, around your loved ones, they're going to notice a change, but, you know, it will impact your relationships. It will impact the way that you interact with every person in your life. So it is something that is, you know, I don't love the word disability, but it can become disabling.
Is there a temporal element to this when it becomes sort of a, you know, adjustment disorder with anxiety? Is this doesn't last a weekend, it lasts a year, or, you know, what, where does that fall off?
Well, an adjustment disorder is a different, you know, type of anxiety or response to a big life change. And, you know, when you're a clinician, you look at it like this is an understandable, and we validate this person's response. Like, you're going through a big life change. Someone you love passed away. You know, you witnessed things and more. It makes sense that this is a struggle for you, but it's more typically during that time frame that it's happening. Maybe a child moves schools and maybe a child's going through a divorce. During that early stage of those big changes is really where you can see that anxiety. It makes sense, right? We don't understand what's going to happen in our future. Things are really out of our control during that time. So people tend to feel anxiety, and that it makes sense. You know, we want to know what's going to happen. We want to be able to control things in our life, and it's just impossible to have that control. So when it becomes more of a pervasive issue after those big changes might have settled, you know, you've been in your new school for months at a time, you know, your new family unit maybe is more established, that big change has come and gone a while ago. If you're still struggling, that's when we know this becomes more of a anxiety disorder that you should seek help for.
So if I've transitioned out of the service and I'm dealing with it at the time I transition, it's one thing. But if it's years later, it's really a different kind of problem. It's still anxiety, but now maybe it's moved into that anxiety disorder phase is kind of how I'm reading this.
Yes. And also you can seek out treatment during an adjustment disorder. Many people say, you know what, I know this is going to be a hard time for me right now. I might as well just make it easier on myself and get the help that I need during this big transition. And that's, I always advocate people to do that. You don't have to wait until something is at a crisis level to implement support in your life. Because it's better to prevent something from escalating, of course, than, you know, having such a huge disruption in your life months and months later. You know, if you can prevent that, then, you know, try. It's worth having those services. I mean, every person being discharged from, you know, service, it's great. I know that there's a lot of more resources nowadays than there used to be. It's great to just say, hey, if you're struggling, here's what you have. You know, getting your checkups every year at a doctor, you know, there's screenings that are available just to check on people.
And one of the things I'm wondering is if somebody who's suffering from that level of anxiety, can they recognize it? Can they pull themselves out of it? Or is it really family members and friends who sort of go, hey, you need to get a little help?
You know what? I think it's both. It depends on the person, and it depends. There's several things it can depend upon. You know, how someone's raised is really important. You know, in your family, was it discussed? Was mental health discussed? What were the messages you received? You know, if you're a male or if you're a female, you know, we suck it up, you know, be tough, or, you know, if you're not okay, come to me. You can always talk to me. You know, I know we're dealing with adults, you know, with spouses. It just depends on how your view of mental health is. But many people, I'd say most people that are experiencing anxiety, they might be confused at first because maybe they feel, oh, I'm just nervous, or I don't feel well. You can even feel like, man, I just don't feel good. I might have some type of physical illness. And over time, these symptoms aren't going away. They feel just fearful and on edge, even around things that typically wouldn't cause such a response. It has to be out of proportion for that context, if that makes sense. So, you know, typically maybe this never would have made me so edgy and irritable. I never used to be fearful of this. Now I'm feeling all these, you know, overtly reactive feelings toward these minor stressors. So many people, you know, will witness it. They might offer their help. I always encourage someone to be kind and say, hey, it seems to me that you're struggling. I've noticed some changes in your behavior. I'm here for you. What do you think could help? How can I help you? Would you ever consider talking to someone? You know, I would support you with that. Would you like me to talk to someone about finding resources? Let's call, you know, your caseworker. Let's talk to, you know, anyone that you feel connected to in your life. It's okay to say, hey, I'm worried about you. And a lot of people really are self-aware of their anxiety at a certain point, but it can be hard to say, I need help. So if you can bridge that gap, if someone you love and you've noticed they've had changes that are affecting them and it's affecting your life too, if this is your spouse or a parent, you know, it's okay to ask them, are you okay? Do you need help? It just shows that you care. That's my opinion.
Well,
right,
and as a licensed
out of line, I don't.
Yeah, as a licensed professional clinical counselor, you've probably worked both with, you know, if you will, the patient and friends or family of the patients who've come forward and said, you know, there might be maybe there's a reason for you to talk to somebody, and we certainly want to encourage our veteran radio listeners, their friends and family members, don't be shy, step up and talk about it, because, you know, if you go down this anxiety spiral, it can lead to a really bad place, including suicidal ideations, I think.
Yes. Yeah, it can. And a lot of people that experience anxiety also experience depression at the same time. They're often comorbid. So this person may already be feeling, my life is out of control. This isn't what I envisioned for myself. I feel like a failure. I feel like I'm letting my family down. I feel like I'm a burden. So if I say that I need help, it's just going to, you know, almost kind of prove to themselves that they're not strong. And someone ends up just hurting in silence and isolating themselves, sometimes to protect the people they love, but really it's not helping the situation. So we always want to encourage people to reach out, especially if they're feeling suicidal. You know, that's often what I do in my weekly, you know, my daytime job. It's not uncommon to feel suicidal, especially, you know, experiencing any type of trauma. If you have a history of trauma, that's going to just raise your risk a little bit. Having depression and anxiety that isn't treated over a long period of time can lead to someone feeling that way. So we always want to reach out for help if we can. And it's okay to ask someone, are you feeling suicidal? Would you ever consider taking your own life? I know it can be uncomfortable for people to talk about that, but you're not going to put that idea into somebody's head. I know some people get worried to bring up that word, to say the word suicide, and you're actually going to give someone an opportunity to, you know, have that moment to say, yeah, I do think about this sometimes, and I'm scared. And then you can get them help if they are willing to talk to you about it. So
it's okay to ask. That's where I want to transition, and we're talking to Sarah Babiak, who's a licensed clinical counselor, about anxiety, and you've mentioned treatment a couple of times. I think it would be helpful for our veteran radio listeners to sort of understand, if I've got that sort of anxiety problem, not the routine problem, but one that needs really some treatment, is there treatment? What are the options? Is it just drugs? Is it just talk? What do you do?
Well, there's several things that someone can do. And my first suggestion would to be make an appointment with a counselor, really any mental health provider. There's several different types of roles. There's licensed independent social workers, counselors like myself. Some psychologists will provide talk therapy. But yes, talk therapy is very important. It is very helpful, and anxiety treatments do work. It just depends on how severe where you are with your anxiety. So that's something that a mental health provider can help you kind of gauge it in the beginning. They will do an intake appointment with you just to get your history, to get, you know, have you witnessed trauma? Have you had anxiety, you know, prior to coming into the service? You know, even our civilians, just what's happened in your life that's brought you here today? How can I help empower you? Really, the client is the person doing the work. We just help provide those tools. And really, a big thing about counseling is just feeling validated. Many people feel that their feelings are invalid. They feel like, you know, if I say this, people may not take me seriously, or they'll minimize it in some way. So just hearing someone say, you know, your pain is valid, and it's okay that you're not doing well, and I'm here to listen. And it's an unbiased person that's there to, you know, just help someone feel heard. And that's really powerful in and of itself. But I think the main type of therapy that's shown promise with anxiety is cognitive behavioral therapy. And many clinicians, you know, are trained in that. There's a lot of clinicians that are what we call eclectic. They have multiple types of therapy practices. But this one, I'd say, is the most common. So we just kind of address some of those negative thought patterns, or what are these triggering thoughts you're having? You know, when you're feeling anxious, what triggers an anxiety attack, or what triggers you to go down that spiral of, oh, there's no coming out of this black hole? You know, thoughts like, I'm never going to be okay, or thoughts of, I'm a failure, you know, which can lead to feelings of, you know, defeat, feeling depressed, which can lead to then certain behaviors and choices that you're making. So the main school of thought is, you know, our thoughts lead to certain feelings that we experience, and those feelings lead to certain behaviors and choices that we make. So if we can change our thoughts, that's the whole point of that type of therapy. Once we start with changing some of those negative thoughts, we can then change how we feel and how we behave. Changing something, I am capable, or say, I can make mistakes. It does not mean that I'm a failure. You know, I am human. I'm a work in progress. And, you know, having maybe a journal, keeping track of your triggers, writing down positive affirmations, you know, like I said, I am capable. There are people that love me. I've been through hard times and I'm still here. I'm surviving. Those are all types of things that could be addressed in counseling. If someone wants to try counseling first, that's what we call the lowest level of care. If they want to incorporate certain medications into their treatment that have been very extensively studied to help with depression and anxiety, I'm a huge advocate for that. You know, we really don't hesitate to take, you know, an antibiotic when we have a sinus infection, or other medications when we're not well. But a lot of people, I think because of that stigma, are hesitant to take a medication that will help you with your mental health. So an all around, you know, encroaching approach is the best practice as far as mental health. Medication and counseling combined does show the best results. But it just depends on what someone wants to try.
Well, and we should let our veteran radio listeners and know, and if you're getting your health care at VA, VA has, you know, they offer all kinds of treatment options that have proven to be effective for most people. Mm-hmm. And they have various types of professionals to assist you in dealing with any excess anxiety, I guess I'll call it, mm-hmm. or any adjustment disorder that you might have. And you may find that anxiety is either a direct service connection or a secondary service connection, and you may be entitled to disability compensation. In our parlance in the VA disability world, a secondary service connection is, hey, I've got some other disability because of my service. Maybe my kidneys are bad, or my heart is bad, and that's service connected. And now I'm just worried where that's going to leave me. And I'm now giving myself developing an anxiety disorder because I'm worried about that service-connected disorder, which may be, as I say, your kidneys or your heart or whatever it might be. So that may allow you to seek some additional compensation. But first and foremost, you should be getting the treatment available in the VA world, if you get your VA health care, or out in the community, if you're allowed to under the VA rules, or on private sector side. Am I correct that most mental health counseling like this is covered by regular medical insurance?
Yes, you are correct. Depends on your provider, but you know, most insurances have some type of coverage, maybe a certain copay or this many sessions with a licensed counselor or social worker per calendar year. So, you know, you can always contact your insurance provider and see what's covered, or the counseling agency can do that for you.
So it's not hopeless, is your point, Sarah Babiak, is that there are treatments and there are ways to get better if you're feeling this way, or you have a friend or a family member who's just experiencing a lot of anxiety.
Yes, it's not hopeless. There's definitely help out there. So acknowledge that you're struggling and take the next step and get the help that you can get, because it's out there.
Sarah Babiak, I want to thank you for taking some time today to talk to Veterans Radio listeners about anxiety and how it layers into life at different times and the treatments that are available should you be struggling with that particular situation.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows by going to veteransradio.net. And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
We again want to thank our national sponsors, the National Veterans Business Development Council, NVBDC.org, VA Ann Arbor Health Care System, the Vietnam Veterans of America Charles S. Kettles Chapter, Ann Arbor, Michigan, VFW Graf O'Hara Post 423 in Ann Arbor, and the American Legion Prescorn Post 46, also in Ann Arbor. They keep us on the air, as does your support. Go to Facebook, go to veteransradio.net, and support our efforts. And until next time, you are dismissed.